Welcome back to the Hero Mindset Podcast. And my guest today is retired Command Sergeant Major Garrick Griffin, a battle buddy, a friend. And we're glad to have him, especially on this Memorial Day, as we reflect on the many people who lost their lives in service to our country. So, Garrick, it's great to have you. Why don't you catch us up on what's going on with you? I know you have a new book. You're doing some consulting and stuff like that. So tell us what's going on in your life.
TJ, first of all, man, I gotta say thank you for having me here, man. It was an honor and a privilege that you reached out to me and asked me to be on your show, man. You're doing some of the things that me and you talked about numerous times, and that's finding something else to do after you take that uniform off. Many of us struggle when we take that uniform off, trying to find our identity. And I'm glad to see that you done found some things that that you like. Plus, I'm liking the hair, man. I got to say, man, I was hoping that you stayed over here with the bald head brothers, but I'm liking the hair, man. I'm feeling it.
The hair's pretty amazing. I ain't gonna lie. Thank you.
But again, that's another piece of finding who TJ is. You know what I'm saying? So as far as me, you know, I mean, you said it, 30 years in the Army, retired back in 2020, right when COVID happened. Currently, I am a doctoral student motivated by TJ. I am currently enrolled at Columbia Southern, going through my DBA right now with a focus on organizational leadership. As you talked about, since I done retired, I wrote two books. One, Don't Talk About It, Be About It. It's about, you know, identifying those things that stop people from being great. And then what do you do to fix those? And so, and I share some stories about myself during my military time, as well as personal stuff in my civilian life. And then the last book that I just released in April is called Use Your Head for More Than a Hat Rack. So my first squad leader, platoon sergeant, or whatever you want to call it, was my granddad. And my granddad always had some type of saying or some type of quote for me and my brother, because me and my brother are only 2 years apart. So, you know, we did a lot of, we got in trouble a lot together. And one of the things my grandfather used to always tell me and my brother is to use our head for more than a hat rack. Every time we did something stupid, he would always say, use your head for more than a hat rack. So that book is quotes that I got from my grandfather. Use your head for more than a hat rack. You never seen a dog run out the parked car. It's hard by the yard, but it's a cinch by the inch. I use all those quotes and I tell stories, and then how you can utilize them in your everyday life, man. So that's what I've been doing, man. School and continue to mentor and actually I'll be in Atlanta next month. I've been asked to come out to talk to Atlanta Recruiting Battalion NCOs. They got an LPD coming going on, so I'm gonna go out there and talk to 50 NCOs about motivation. And I would just say, you know, I'm not a big fan of motivation because I don't believe in motivation. I don't believe in it. I don't teach it.
I got you.
Yeah, because some people think, you know, motivation is tied to feelings. And, you know, oftentimes hear people say, well, I'm not motivated today. I don't feel like doing it today. See, when you establish a routine, when you discipline, it don't make a difference whether or not you're motivated or not. You still going to go ahead. I'm not motivated. People think I'm motivated every day. They see me smiling. They see me always working out and stuff. But I don't be wanting to do that stuff every day. But I know I need to do it. And so go ahead.
If I can interrupt.
Yeah.
Because you're making yourself motivated, right? And so I had an instructor. He's a civilian instructor in one of the cyber courses. He said it's like it's raining cupcakes while you're riding unicorns. Well, you know, at that particular point in our lives, it was when we were going through that, right? I mean, at that stage in my career, but not every day. It's like riding unicorns while you're eating cupcakes. And, you know, it's much more mundane. I'll tell you, Alan Weiss told me a couple of weeks ago, and he was on my first podcast, and I do a lot of work with him.
Sorry, great interview.
Thank you. He said, you know, he told me, he said something about, somebody asked him why he's been married so long. And he says, well, he says, you know, I'll tell you what my wife said. He says, you know, there's, you know, you got the good times, you got the bad times, and then you survive on the okay times. you know. And there's a lot more okay times than there than the peaks, you know, at either end of the extreme. And I mean, nothing probably taught us that more than being leaders in the army. But yeah, I got you. So you're saying you're talking to the Atlanta recruiting battalion about motivation. So tell us more about that.
Well, I, you know, one of my mentees, he's a sergeant major there, and you know, he know what I talk about. One, I'm going there to tell them why they doing what they do, and I just want to, I want them to understand that while they out there recruiting people, they not just recruiting people, they recruiting a form, a future sergeant major or a future general officer, and then just share my story. You know, I come from a single parent home, low income area, didn't have many opportunities. And if it wasn't for my recruiter, I don't know if I'd be sitting here talking to you right now, TJ. And so I don't, when I go down there and talk to him, my goal is not to see people as numbers and see them as human beings and see them as being future leaders, that they would want. So, because they have a, you know, it's a tough mission right now that they got going on with all the stuff that's going on in society, you know, Iran, and you know, all that stuff. And I don't like to get into talking about politics, but you know, I came in the military during a heated time in the army. I came in before the Gulf War. I actually was still Desert Shield when I came in. And so I know the challenges that they're facing right now. But and so that's what I'm going down there to talk to them about. And then just for me, it's another opportunity to give back as well as you know, answer whatever questions that they want answer.
Well, I think that's great. I think that's amazing. That's exactly why I got into doing the podcast and the writing, to be able to add value to folks. You talked about, you just mentioned motivation, and I think you're spot on. We have to, this is one thing I disagreed about in the Sergeant Major's Academy, you know, is a lot of talk about motivation, but how we are supposed to motivate our people. And I'm like, nah, I think the best motivation comes intrinsically. And it's not, like I said, and I'm going to see if I can trademark that phrase, but it's not always like riding unicorns while you're eating cupcakes. It's there's, you know, you talked about your dad or your grandfather, and I'll talk about mine in a minute, but I'll tell you, my dad, I remember us, I was getting promoted to Master Sergeant, and we were in General Barrett's office. She invited everybody, all the family up to talk, you know, to spend some time with him. And she says, "Dad, did you ever think, you know, he would be at this point?" And he says, "The guy couldn't, kid couldn't even turn on a computer. Had no idea." You know, like I hoped, but there was a period of uncertainty. You know, I remember at Fort Gordon, Georgia, had to have been, so it was between 2000, July 4th, 2002, when I went to AIT, when I left basic training at Fort Jackson, went to AIT, and between November, maybe December, probably more like somewhere mid-December when I left. I'm talking to my dad on the phone, and he served, my dad was a Vietnam veteran, served off of Yankee Station in the on the USS Blue Ridge in during Vietnam. And I said, "Well, what do I got to do to be, you know, to become an E9?" And I was thankful that my dad, having been enlisted, had instilled in me from the very beginning a very common way. And you know that granddads and grandfathers have that ability to do. I really didn't understand the difference, you know, at that point. But he says, you know, just son, always remember that those E8s and E9s, those are the enlisted equivalent of general officers. He said, I mean, there's no equivalent, right? But I got what he was saying. And I said, well, what do I got to do to be one of them? And he says, every decision is a career decision from this point on. Now, did I not do stupid stuff between now? Did I not do seriously questionable stuff? No, of course. It was the point that you know, what I get from that now is that, you know, you have your, you know, if we were doing MDMP, you know, you have where you are now, you have the operational environment, and you have where you want to be.
Yes,
And then
sir.
you work to shape the operational environment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of sausage making that goes into that. You know, going to Pete, I was talking with a mentor of mine who's retired the other day, I've known forever. And I was like, man, remember when we used to like get up at 4 o'clock in the morning so that we could get on the post at a decent time so we could take about a 30-minute nap before we went and started going through the barracks? And I said, and we didn't leave. I said, you know, we, you know, if you didn't leave, we would change everything there and, you know, come back, eat lunch there, you know, at the company or the battery or the battalion or whatever. So there's some sausage making days that go in, you know, that go into this. And then, but you know, you're focused on that prize. You're always asking yourself, is the risk, you know, or the cost worth, you know, what I'm going to get out of it? And speaking in terms of us recruiting the, you know, n people to come in, I mean, you know, I'm going to get more than 50% of my retirement, but you stay in 20 years, you get at least 50%. I mean, that's, you know, $30,000, $40,000, maybe up to 50, 60, and depending on what you're doing. So it's not a bad gig, but not every day. I mean, there's going to be days when you get those calls from the SMA and you're thinking, you know, like what the, you know, like what my days just got, you know, dramatically worse than I wanted it to. I mean, that didn't happen to me at my level, but I'm just using that as an example. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. We have to become more, from my perspective, we need to, as Alan Weiss would say, if you don't blow your own horn, there's no music. And I would also say that, you know, if you don't motivate yourself, there's no motivation, you know, because the environment is in is going to be, it's never going to be ideal, rarely going to be, you know, ideal. Look at D-Day. Look at the invasion of Normandy.
So, like this morning, I didn't say this, but you know that I also I go live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Facebook. And this morning or this week's topic, because this year I completely changed it up. Every week I have a topic now or a theme for the week, and then that's what we talk about the whole week. So this week's theme was be a lighthouse. And the reason why I say that is, in regards if you're a leader or you're a parent or whatever, getting right back to what you was talking about as far as, you know, motivation, many of us in life, we are tugboats. And when I say tugboat, you know, we did that in the military. We was pulling people. We was forcing people to be motivated. We was trying to, you know, dragging people along. We was the people that was answering all the questions and solving all the problems. But what you realize is when you become a tugboat, when you take on other people's problems, they become your problems. So that's other weight that you're putting on yourself. The true way to
That's
motivate people
great.
around you is by being a lighthouse. What does a lighthouse do? A lighthouse sit right there on land at the edge, and all it does is it shine a light. It don't tell the boats what they should or what they shouldn't do, but it helps them not navigate through paths and stuff like that. So as a leader, as a parent, as a mentor, our goal should be is to be lighthouses and not tugboats. I know we want to help everybody. It feels good to help everybody, but on the long run, are you really helping them by giving them all the answers, by always fixing stuff, or are you enabling them? So that's the topic for this week, and it's point on what you were just talking about.
Well, were you a drill sergeant? You were a
I
drill
was a
sergeant, weren't
former,
you?
actually,
It's
TJ, I'm gonna tell you this, man. You kind of made me feel really, really old when you said you was in basic training at AIT in 2002, because I was at Fort Jackson in 2002 as a drill sergeant. Matter of
Oh
fact,
man.
in 2002, I was the Fort Jackson Drill Sergeant of the Year.
Were you what I was in Delta Company, first of the 28 Black
So
Lions.
that's Black Lives. That was in First Brigade. I was in Fourth Brigade. I was in two. I did 2 years in 239, Triple AO, and then I did 2 years at the United States Army Drill Sergeant School as a drill sergeant instructor.
Wow. So,
Yeah,
well, it
hey,
happens, you know, but
TJ, you probably was one of those soldiers that, because you know, like if a soldier missed training, then they would go do the range with another organization. And I can remember many times having soldiers from the Black Lion Battalion, and I'd be saying, "Hey, soldier, do you understand this information I'm giving you?" And the soldier be like, "Black Lion, I don't want to hear no Black Lions. I need to hear whether or not yes or no you understand Black
So
Lion genocide,
it's
Black
really
Lion."
fun. It was funny that you mentioned that because we go to what there we had a guy, bald white guy, skinny white guy, drill sergeant Bull, when I reported to AIT at Fort Jackson. And he said something about, he said, who's coming from first of the 28th at Fort Jackson? Raise your hand. And he says, you know, because I kill black lions. I don't want to hear none of that crap. You know, but you'd still do it. You'd still, you know, because that's all you
TJ,
said. It was
I'm gonna be
black
honest,
lions, drill
man.
sergeant.
I do it right now to my wife. Instead of it's for me, Black Lion is just like saying whore. I do it to my kids, man. And I wasn't even in that battalion, but I heard it so much, man. It's deeply rooted in me.
I never forget about it. I still, so it's fun. I'm glad that you mentioned that. So one of the, you talk about, this is a great story because, you know, this was right after 9/11 that I was at basic training. And so, you know, at Fort Jackson, they had stopped it. So you couldn't park close to, you know, like you can now. We're back kind of full circle, but then you couldn't park close to the buildings and stuff. They had put guard, they had, you know, guard mounts behind the buildings, you know, soldiers were maintaining, you know,
Jersey, they put jersey
so
barriers, they put all kind of stuff up. I was there.
what I was, even though I was brand new into my training, probably just a couple of days, what I did know and what I was smart enough to do is look at pictures, right? So I knew that this person pulling up in their POV was a brigade commander. I had no idea how to salute with my weapon. So I just saluted, right? Because when in doubt, whip it out, right? So Kevin Schwedo, that was Kevin Schwedo, Colonel Kevin Schwedo, this
Colonel
brigade commander.
Schwedo, I got pictures. I send you after this interview, I send you some pictures with Colonel Schwedo. He
Oh, okay.
actually he is part of the local government there, and well,
Yep.
actually he's at the
In South
state level now.
Carolina.
He's at the state level in South Carolina
Yep. When you send them to me, I'll share them with him. He'll love
now.
it. I still talk to him. But he says, so he says, Private Trent, did you just start your training? And I said, yes, you know, only been a couple of days. And he got out of his vehicle. He said, well, let me show you how to salute with your weapon.
Awesome.
And I never forgot that. You know, it, two things. It goes to what you were saying about not giving people the answers to the test, letting them, you know, taking some risk, letting them, you know, make mistakes. And when we're in situations where you know, training situations, depending, we can afford to allow people to make mistakes, and we can learn from it, you know. And that's what I will, you know, always, what I was going to say about being a drill sergeant, you know, I wasn't a drill sergeant, but that's, drill sergeants were the lighthouses, you know. And, you know, they were the ones on the, you know, land nav course saying, do you really, do you think that's going to get you where you need to go? You know, helping you know, critically think, at the same time telling you that, hey, some stuff you don't need to think about. It's broken down into steps. Know the steps. You execute it from memory. But there was also an element of critical thinking.
Hey man, probably. It was being a drill sergeant was the best job I had. I mean, I've been a first sergeant, I've been a sergeant major, but by far the best job I ever had was being a drill sergeant. And it's funny, man, because Major Payne came out around about that time too. So imagine, and I had my gold tooth at that time too. So I used to always tell the soldiers, although Major Payne came out a few years before I was on the trail, I would always tell the soldiers that they stole my story, and we was currently in litigation. Because they stole my story, because you know that's what they called me, Major Payne, when I was on the trail, man. But it was the ability to change those soldiers or those civilians into soldiers and their lives, man. Like you said, Colonel Schwedo could have easily, you know, chopped you up for not knowing how to salute. But instead, what he did, he took the time, and that's what a lot of leaders need to understand. Sometimes you gotta take the time to show people. We automatically assume that they know certain things based off what we were taught, or how we came up. I've never been the guy to chop nobody up until after I done showed them. They told me they understood. Then we might get in the chop up area. Here's the thing: I don't even really chop them up. We look at what was the lesson to be learned. Society has taught us failure is a bad thing, and it's not. Man, matter of fact, some of the greatest leaders, Nick Saban, who was the coach at UCLA, John Wooden. He said, John Wooden said, sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. Nick Saban said he really could never teach his guys anything until we lost a game. Because don't nobody want to hear that when you win. They think they got it all. It's not until you make a mistake. It's not until something happens that you can actually get an opportunity to teach people stuff. Now, how you teach them when something happens plays a major role too. And my goal was always to make sure that I be the most, the coolest guy in the room. I always wanted to be a thermostat and not a thermometer. I always wanted to be the person that controlled the environment. If it needed the heat need to be turned up, I turn the heat up. But it's also times that the heat need to be turned down and I turned it down. Because a thermometer, anybody can be a thermometer. Anybody can tell you it's hot in the room, it's cold in the room, but a thermostat controls it. So I'm glad Colonel Suedo did what he did. I remember him like it was yesterday. He was actually the brigade commander at the time when I won Drill Sergeant of the Year. He was one of the people that gave me many of my awards. So that's awesome, man.
Yeah. One of the things that resonated with me when you were just saying that, well, one, when you were first talking about your grandfather, I tell people, often share with people how I learned how to swim. We were on a boat with my grandfather and grandmother, and I said I wanted to learn how to swim. And he said, "Boy, you sure about that?" And I said, "Yeah, I want to learn how to swim." And so he threw me off the And then, he got in with me after a minute. And my grandmother looked, she says, "Well, he needs to learn how to react in a stressful situation." And I learned how to swim before, pretty quickly. By the time I went to swim lessons in kindergarten, I was already, that they was just polishing it up. But I wasn't afraid to get in the water because I knew the worst case scenario was is I got a doggy paddle and scream for a little bit.
My grandfather did it. I think that's grandfather 101. I just think that's how they do stuff. I remember trying to learn how to ride a bike. He taught me how to ride a bike, and all he did was push me toward a tree. He said, "You'll figure it out."
Yeah. You remember Nick at Night, or Anzio, I guess was the official term, but Nick at Night, and
One of
how
my
you tell
favorites.
us, you're telling us, hey, if you got a low crawl, and if you just your head's going to explode if you just move it an inch. In reality, they're so far, you could stand 10 Shaquille O'Neals on top of each other. But the bunker alarm goes off, and you got to go over the berm or whatever. And I just froze. And I'll never forget it. Drill Sergeant Kelsey Goodson, he's a staff sergeant, picked me up, threw me over the berm, and then I just started crawling. And I tell people, that's you got to get your
Gotta get
that's
started.
that motivation. That crawling is that motivation when the sausage making is, getting a little too much, when it's not, when you're not riding unicorns and it's raining and it's raining cupcakes, that's that level of internal motivation, we have to get to it. And I'm thankful that I learned it very early on in the Army. And another thing that that was early on, and as a sergeant major, what I'll tell you is, and what I would constantly tell people, because there was always, and you hear it now online and stuff, and people aren't happy with awards. People aren't happy with, evals, or they didn't get counseled or something, And I'd always tell people when they come to me, hey, look, I only advise, and I only advise one person. But what I will tell, what I would tell them is you have to be your own biggest advocate. And if you're not advocating for yourself, if you're not motivated to help us make sure that you're being properly counseled and that you're getting this feedback, it's on both of you. It's on both people. You have to be you know you have to be your greatest advocate. And at the same time, You have to be willing to consider the feedback that you're getting. Now, you could think that person's, that it's not, that it's not good feedback, that it's wrong, whatever. But you have to, you have to be willing to do those, you have to be willing to do those things. You have to be willing to, I remember as a mess sergeant, we went, so as you were retiring, I think about around the time we got to know each other through James Breckenridge and stuff, is we're going through COVID. And right before COVID had hit, I closed out one eval. Colonel had told me, the brigade commander, my senior aide, said, "Hey, this is what you need to do if you want to get the top bop the next time." And then, a couple months after that, we go into COVID and all these operations and stuff, scaled for COVID. And as I was PCSing, I called him up and I said, "Sir, I said, you said if I did these things, I'd get the top bot. What's going on with my eval?" He says, "I'll call you back." A couple days later, he called me back and he says, "Yeah, you met all the metrics that I told you to that I needed you to meet." So that takes some courage, because you have to be, you may I may not have met them, but it didn't, but asking didn't help, or but I asked. And I'll tell you something funny happened the other day. And again, Alan Weiss's dad served in World War II, so, and he's, by virtue of that and just life experiences, has experienced a lot of things, a lot of the shared hardship, that we've experienced by virtue of our service. And I told him, I said, "I was at this meeting with the fire chief the other day, and he needed somebody to help with resilience in his organization. And I said, I just got so wrapped around the axle, so anxious, that I couldn't even go talk to him." And he replied back to my email. He says, "You need to fix that now. You are willing to go to war, but you're too afraid to talk to somebody." He says, "What kind of sense does that make?" And that's what I think we are, what I think we're kind of missing today when we talk about motivation and we talk about, I see what's going on. I don't think people, the soldiers, are any different than you and I were, even though we like to say, "Oh, back in my day, I had to ride in the, we didn't even have LMTVs. We had to walk 100 miles to the chow hall, and then we had to stand up." We're all going to tell those stories. Stories, soldiers love to tell those stories. My dad would call them sea stories. They're more for your entertainment than they are for the, they're like parables in the Bible. Not, can't take them, word for word, right? But one of the things that I'll tell you I get as I reflect back, and is, we're not different, but we also have to understand that society has changed, and they've been experienced to different things. Your parents, my parents, our grandparents were grew up during the Depression, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Bay of Pigs. And so the country hasn't rallied like that, at that level since World War II, where everybody come together, everything was directed towards the war effort, as we would call it, the defense industrial base, everything kind of took on that framework. And so I think, the Army is a great opportunity. The military is a great opportunity. It continues to be for people in general, because you can get exposure to some of that shared adversity. On the other side, I think where we've lost it, when I said we, the colloquial we, is that we have, in some instances in the military, become too inclusive of the culture, of the culture at large, right? Rather than maintaining the culture specific to, your service to military, right? And I
So
say that, and I tell
let
them,
me ask
go
you
ahead.
this quick question, because me personally, I have no issues with inclusive. I don't, and I'm just gonna keep it real with you. I think sometimes reasons why organizations don't evolve because they keep on doing stuff the exact same way, always done it. Now, I believe in standards. You talking about a guy that, hey, when I was in, can nobody tell me no different? I'm a firm believer in standards, but I also understand that that particular standard that we may have had that day, it was for a period. Like you just said, I society has shifted. And many of the leaders that I talk to now, instead of realizing that society has shifted, they still want to maintain and be set in their ways. And that's why they find themselves having they struggle. True leaders know how to adapt. Regardless of how the culture changes, regardless of how society changes, I'm a firm believer that true leaders know how to adapt to the situation. Don't mean that their standards change. Don't mean that how they operate change. They just got to do it a little differently. Every generation said what you just said as far as, hey, we had it harder. I ain't even going to talk about the military. I'm going to talk our parents even. Our
Say
parents
it,
even said it. All of them said it. But what I would tell, what I always, my always throwback at, especially some of these guys, my battle buddies that's retired that love to talk bad about the military now, I like to say, well, what if they had cell phones when we was privates? Y'all love to talk about how you would have did this and how you would have done, but you never even had to operate in that type of environment. And many of y'all wouldn't have survived in that environment. Well, I had the luxury because I did 30 years, I seen a whole bunch of changes. And the reason why I was able to navigate those 30 years, I stayed true to who Griff was, but I also learned to adapt. You know, like I don't know how many of my battle buddies by the end, they was afraid, they so afraid of social media, man. They would not get on Facebook to save their
Oh, I
life.
can't wait to.
But I'm like, where your soldiers at? That's where your soldiers at. I mean, you can use this tool to actually benefit you. As a garrison sergeant major, social media was my TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, all those was my friends. That's where the people was at. That's how I got the met. Now, if I just would have just stayed and just been a picture on the wall and didn't adapt or whatever, wouldn't no many of this stuff wouldn't have happened, man. So I always tell these guys, instead of worrying about getting back to, because another phrase that, and I mean you know, we even had this conversation, a phrase
Getting
that
back to
eats
the
me
basics.
up, getting back to the basics eats me up, man. Because people always like to use that, but they use it so loosely. Because getting back to the basics, if we really want to get there, first of all, getting back to the basics for me, my leaders showed me how to do certain things. But when I hear it come out of people's mouth now, all they really want to talk about is getting back to when people was cussing us out. See, I came in the Army. Many of my first leaders was Vietnam vets. They operated completely different. It wasn't no, well, I'm gonna, you know, be gentle and kind. Them jokes were, and many of the people that said, let's get back to that way, was the same ones was crying when it was happening to them, but now they say we need to navigate back to that way. I can remember what, you know, coming through basic training. Drill sergeant could put their hands on you and it was acceptable. It was nothing wrong with it. It was a way of life. You can't do that type of stuff now. So,
You gotta, the operational environment changes.
yeah.
The way you're gonna engage the enemy today may not be the, but the principles that allow you
Right.
to develop an executive strategy, I think those remain relatively, and
Yeah.
I think that's what we mean when we say, or at least what I mean when I say, get back to we got to get back to the basics. What I will tell you though, is when I say so I say it like this: if you go to McDonald's, if you work at McDonald's, you can't wear a Burger King uniform. And I'll give a great example. There's people out there that are fighting this beard thing until, like, they are. I mean, I don't even know if they're charging up the hill anymore. I don't think they can get past the, and at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, is this the, if I can't even get to the hill, I'm not even gonna get the opportunity to die on the hill. Do I want to die in before I can even effectively launch my, counterattack, right? So to speak. And so what I'm saying is, at a certain point, what we have to understand is that the organizations that we work for, whether that's in the private sector or that's in the public sector or that's in the military, they have their standards, and we can advocate for change. And if
Yeah.
they don't want to change, then that's the culture that they want to build. We have to ask ourselves, and this comes back to that motivation, right? Is the cost worth
Is the
the
juice worth
analysis? Is the juice
is the
worth
juice worth the squeeze?
So, yeah, is the juice worth the squeeze? A great example of that, and I'm not this is not a political statement, is General Mattis, when he stepped down as the Secretary of Defense and said that, I don't believe that I can provide the president with the level of service that he needs. And so when you get to that point, there's nothing wrong in walking away. Or you analyze and say, you know what, look, I can deal with shaving for 10 more years because, or I can deal with these, this 10 more years because of the reward, right? And you think about us, and I know you probably came in when y'all were only making what, $100 a month, $200. I'm just joking, but
Not
they
even
even have,
actually,
and
TJ,
you didn't have
my first check in the army was $250.
Yeah.
And
So,
they took
and
all that back because everything that they gave me, because when I was a drill sergeant, I seen soldiers coming with suitcases and everything. But when I came through basic training, you came with what you had on. That was it. You weren't allowed to bring nothing with you. And everything that they gave us at the reception battalion, they took that money back.
Yeah. The But yet we went to making well over, at the end of our careers, well over six figures, when you considered, BAH and BAS, and then not to talk, and then our retirements are worth millions of dollars because we, when you think over the and so the you have to ask yourself that. I'll tell you, I think there are always things, that we could do better. But when, and I always advocated, oh, I'm going to tell you, the awards took up a lot of my time, especially overseas, right? When you're overseas and you're in a an operational environment, let me tell you, I could get MSMs approved better than I could get somebody a better than I could get somebody in my brigade a what do you call it, impact award. That was, man. And I would advocate with my brigade sergeant, I would tell him, this at a certain point I knew that it was, that this just wasn't, that these that, that this wasn't going to happen. The consensus was X, Y, and Z, right? And I wasn't going to overcome that. So we have to understand, I think this is part of motivation too, right? We have to understand when, where our sector of fire is, what's going to be the most effective sector of fire. You're out there on the range with those privates. Sector of fire is, that big if you're just looking at the range fans, but your sector of fire, for you to be successful, you have to be engaging the targets, right in front of you. And so
So me, for
the
me,
go ahead.
and it's getting back to what you said. You definitely have to read the room, but again, I prided myself as always been putting myself in positions where I didn't have to, let's say, get so much permission. Because I realized early in my military career, in order to be have more of an impact, in order to have more say, I got to get a little bit more rank. But I also had to stay true to myself. Again, I never navigated my whole life in the military, basically, which is because I got the gold tooth when I was a private. And I had a whole bunch of people that would tell me, hey, you would never make Sergeant Major with that gold tooth. But again, that's because they lived under how things used to be. When the army put the gold tooth in my mouth, so how can you tell me I'm not going to get promoted? Do you know how many senior leaders, and let's go back to the beard thing. Because for me, I don't have a problem with the beard. What the problem I have is with people enforcing the standard of the beard.
Oh.
Beard is not the problem. If a
Yeah.
doctor says that, if a doctor tells me that TJ can wear a beard, then who am I to tell him he can't wear a beard? The problem is when I, as a leader, don't know the standard of how he should wear that beard and then allow him to just wear however he wants to. That is the problem that many people have but don't want to say. Most people, because hey, we never shaving profiles didn't just start last week. They've been there
No,
since the beginning. They've been there since the beginning of time. Hell,
yeah.
if you go back to the conception of this country and you look at many of the pictures back, especially during the Civil War time, look at all them guys had beards. They all those general officers and every they had beards and everything. So okay, then we learn a few medical things or whatever. But the excuse I would always get, you cannot properly seal your protective mask. That's why you can. But yet again, then why is the hospital giving that? Why is the hospital continuing saving profiles? Now the problem is you don't want to know what the standard is. How long should TJ's beard be and then ensure that I'm enforced? Because that's what leaders are supposed to do, enforce standards. And like what you said with General Mattis, and it was the same thing with me. When it came to the end of my career, because change is going to happen. Here's the other piece. If there's one thing that's constant in this world and in life is change, either I can be a part of the change or I can move out of the way and let it happen. I remember when we got rid of BDUs. TJ, I'm gonna tell you right now, I was a disgruntled employee. Because I knew the second and third order effects of getting rid of that uniform. But at some point, you know what? I'm still in as a leader. Do I continue to fight it or must I embrace it? Because now I'm the change agent. And now I got soldiers showing up in my formation with a different uniform. And so at some point when the decision's made as a leader, you have to embrace it. You can't keep on fighting it. What I see with a lot of people is they keep on trying to fight a standard that's no longer there. I have people correcting people on stuff that hadn't been a standard since I was in the military, but they still want to keep on. They still, well, you know, that ain't right. When was the last time you cracked open a book to even see what the standard was? You know, so I have no issue with the female soldiers wearing their hair down because my wife had alopecia. Real leaders and Sameh Dathili sat down and he said he was one of the ones that was kind of upset till he had a young lady sit him down, a young African American female sit him down and explain to him why, you know, having them bald their hair like that, it causes alopecia. Because he never knew that. But we have to, that's where it comes to being a great leader too, is actually sitting down and listen to these young men and women. Because oftentimes we looking at stuff through our lens and we don't try to look at stuff through their lens. Because you can become very educated and learn a lot by looking at stuff through their lens.
Well, it's good that you mentioned that. So that goes back to change, right? You know, the operational environment is dynamic. I mean, just using that term for, you know, I guess in its most general sense, right? So you get, but you teach. The fundamentals of marksmanship don't change, but what does change is how you specifically
As you
articulate
get
that
in.
to those soldiers or how you help them apply that, right? And so if the goal is safety, right? Well, I've seen people with buns so big that you wouldn't be able to put a Kevlar on your head. So, you know, and I've seen people with, you know, at the same time with ponytails so long that, you know, that is a safety thing. So my point is we, what's the why? If the why is safety, then there potentially is multiple ways we can get after that.
For me, it leads right back to again, what's the standard? What is the
Well, what's
standard?
this?
Because again, I've been in certain organizations when you out down the range, everybody have to have a Kevlar on. But yet, then I go to other places, you don't have to wear a
Fire
Kevlar. Matter of
slick.
fact, so tell me, I just need to know what the standard is.
Well,
Because
and that's what I'm getting at.
oftentimes people base stuff off of is it, well, in their mind, that's not safe. But what is the standard?
And you know the and so we have to we can change the standard, we can alter them, and we can still get after, well, we can the standard can be the standard. And if the standard is safety and protecting people and being able to make sure you can fun and ensure lethality, well, we can do that. Now, how we get after that can change. At the same time, what I tell everybody is that once it's been decided which way, you know, how we're going to do this, it's our job to move out and draw
Execute.
fire, you know, and execute. And one thing somebody taught me, and you can't read too much into it, you know, but I appreciated it, was, oh, I think it was my first command as a sergeant major, was my first boss. And he's like, look, I don't have and intent. I have the CG has intent, and I base, and everything else is based upon, based off that. And that's what I would tell, and that's what I would tell people as a sergeant major. Look, I don't, the boss has the intent, and we're all going to move out and draw fire in our sectors based upon that. And once that's been decided, we have to move out. And that's why I just tell people, look, we can influence things. We can try to influence things when it's got to that point. And that's where I see the biggest change now is people, it seems like people just want to beat the dead horse. It seems they don't want to give up. And if they don't get their way, the organization is toxic, the leaders are toxic. I'm going to give a good example. I saw this on social media. Somebody screenshot an award out of IPSA where everybody recommended approval, gets up to brigade commander, and it's to, he recommended down or he downgraded it. Said it was because of the first award. And oh boy, man, that post got not, I mean, I watched it explode and it went viral and everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. I don't normally reply. In this instance, I replied and I said, or what could have happened, and I've seen it happen, is that at the lower level, we don't have the personal courage
Tell the soldier that they don't deserve
to tell
that.
the soldier that that's not gonna cut the, we know it's not, but we go ahead. I said, we don't have the personal courage. So what happens is you call, you wait till it gets up to,
You
the
make
colonel or I,
you look
and you
like a
want
bad
us to
guy.
be the bad guy. I said, which I'm perfectly okay with doing, but it robs you of the of a key development experience. I didn't understand it at first. My brigade commander would call me up, Mike Timko, reminded me of George Patton, but great guy. And he would say, look, I'm not gonna be the bad guy on this. You're going to recommend, somebody finds, go find somebody else to recommend downgrade. I'm not going to be, it doesn't meet. Now we can talk about it, we can do whatever, but as written, it doesn't meet this. And so what I would tell people is if you truly believe that this meets this standard, that this is what they deserve, then you need to come up here and we need to sit down and we need to write this and see if we can write this in a manner that will get this approved. And we were very successful in with at that. But the point I was trying to get across is that we have to again, this goes back to motivation and development. And I see that we we're too quick to blame others, and we're too quick to not be willing to be the bad guy, so to speak, but when we don't, we're robbing people of potentially the motivation to get better, to improve.
You be in a tugboat. TJ leads all the way back. When you don't be the bad guy, I'm gonna be honest. I never had an issue with being the bad guy.
Yeah, me
But
either.
at the same time, when I'm that bad guy, I'm explaining because they need what you and your commander, you and your boss did was a great thing that y'all was able to explain to them because it's a lot of organizations. That's where the disconnect is at. Leaders are downgrade certain things or disapprove certain things, but they don't have a why to go behind it. So now here it is, Sergeant Trent is confused, don't know why it got downgraded or whatever. And so you know what, Sergeant Trent, he gonna continue to keep on making the same mistake, or he just gonna completely not even write an award altogether because he don't know what he's doing right or doing wrong. I never had an issue with being a bad guy. I've always told my leaders underneath me, look, if y'all want me to be the bad guy, I don't care about being the guy, bad guy. But I'm going to tell you why I'm being the bad guy. Here is why. That's what I like about this generation right now compared to my generation when I was coming up in the military. What's the definition of leadership? By providing purpose, direction, and motivation. Well, when I was Private Griffin, you want to know what purpose, direction, and motivation was? Because I said so. I told you to do it, execute. And you know what I did? Because that's the way I was raised. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sergeant. But this generation, which a lot of people give them a knock because they want to know why. It's not because they're challenging you. It's not because they don't want to go against the grain, but they want to understand why. And I give you an analogy. There was a young lady, and her mother was frying fish. I don't know if I ever shared this one with you, but her mom was frying
No.
fish. And every time her mom fried the fish, she'd cut the head and the tail off. And the daughter was like, "Mom, why do we cut the head and the tail off of the fish?" And the mom said, "Well, that's the way my mom taught me." Mom didn't know why, other than that's because that's what my mom taught me. So she go ask grandmama. Grandmama give her the same explanation. The beautiful thing is, great grandmama is still alive. So she go ask great grandmama. "Great grandmama, why do we cut the head and the tail off of the fish?" She said, "Well, when I was your age, we didn't have pots big enough to fit the whole fish inside of. So we would have to cut the head and the tail off so that we could fry it. But now we got pots big enough. But you know what? We keep on operating the way we've always done it because nobody ever asked why." Man, when I tell you I love this generation, and because they ask why, I tell people it's not as easy being a leader as it was for us when we was younger in the military. You want to know why? Because of this thing right here, this cell phone. They got when I was Sergeant Griffin, if I said something, you just do it. Because you ain't no way you're gonna go research it. You ain't got no cell phone to do it. Now, Sergeant Trent, if he tells somebody to do something, who is Black Lion Sergeant? And then they pick their phone up, they go Google it to see that Sergeant Trent don't know what he's talking about. And then guess what? Sergeant Trent credibility is shot from this point on. I think a person in the military actually has to be a leader, has to be a lot smarter these days. And I ain't afraid to say it. Now, I would challenge any joker that served with me that say otherwise. Now, we might have had a little bit more common sense at certain things. I will say that.
Okay,
Because
there we go.
through experience, we ain't had no choice but to get some common sense. But I would tell you, these kids are a lot smarter now. And I like
Yeah.
it because they challenge you. They challenge you to they challenge me to learn more. Because I know if I was serving right now, I would know I'd be the guy that's in all the regulations, in all the books, because I know they're gonna challenge everything that I say, and I'm okay with that.
There's a way you definitely learn how to do that, especially as you get to the more senior levels. And I think one of the things that we can help our soldiers, our people, whatever type of organization we work in, to be more resilient is how to essentially what it's talking about is showing that you have value, to add, right? You're trying to blow your own horn, right? So, hey, there's some music over here. I got some value I can add to this. And so I think there's a way. I see a tendency to, if it doesn't go our way, I see people too quick to say, hey, that's a bad, didn't go my way, so Sergeant Major Griffin's toxic or he's counterproductive. Or and what I will tell you, my thing, I tell people, I said, well, I think we have, in order for there to be toxic leaders, there's got to be, toxic employees. There has to be it's like these. I walked out in my lawn the other day, and there's some mushrooms growing over by my backflow, and I'm like, okay, so the pH, something's off in terms of the chemical balance of the lawn and stuff, because a fungus can grow, right? And so, what I saw for going from private to all the way up, to E9, and what I saw from, O1 to O10, is you learn how to become more surgical with your disagreements. You learn when to ask permission, and you learn when you're just, hey, when Sergeant Major Griffin calls me on Saturday morning, I'm just gonna have to say, hey, I'm just gonna have to ask forgiveness, not, hey, Sergeant Major, this is why we did it this way. Conditions on the ground change. Understood the directive, but the intent was this. And I'll tell you, Colonel Eric Land, as a young sergeant, told me one time, says, if you guys understand my intent, the resources will become irrelevant. You will always be able to be successful.
It's
On
a
that note,
video.
go ahead.
I know we got to shut this thing down. It's a video out there with General Krzyzewski that talks about that, man. And I'm a firm believer in it. I mean, again, getting back to the thermostat and the thermometer, leaders have to set a condition where people can come back and tell them, hey, Sergeant Major, I know this is what we was trying to do, but this situation, this circumstance happened, and we had to do it a little different way. When people know that they can come and say those type of things to you, and they don't blow up, and we teach it, take it as a teaching point, man, your environment grows. I mean, when I say it gets bigger, it gets stronger. It's a book out there, TJ, I want to share with your people.
Go
It's
ahead.
called Multipliers by Lisa Wiseman. And she talks about multipliers and she talks about diminishers in organizations. And the multipliers are those type of people that do what you just said. They encourage people, hey, if it ain't right, tell me what's wrong with it. And then, you know, or they let people feel like they're part of the situation. I've never, and you can go back and you can do your research and you can poll a whole bunch of people. When my first sergeants and even with my sergeant majors and organizations that I was in, if I was given a task, I would put the task out there. This is the task. This is what we have to do. How do y'all think we execute? Because now I'd have made them a part of it. I didn't just dictate and tell them how to do it, because at this point then now they think it stops. Because I done told them this is, I done gave them the tea. And in that book right there, she talks about that. She talks about one of the guys that was her mentor, that he had her looking at her paper, at his paper, and she told him that this was AKW, AWK. It was awkward. And he said, but she didn't give him no fit. He said, the next time you give me an AWK or AKW, you make sure you also give me an FIX, a fix. So don't just tell me something is bad, because that's being a thermometer again. Anybody can tell me that something is bad. But if it's something is bad, then how do you suggest that we fix it? Because if you can't give me a suggestion on how we fix it, then guess what? We're going to continue to operate and execute the way we had dictated. Hey, I know we didn't came to the end, TJ, man. I appreciate I love sitting down and talking to you, because we can sit down and talk for hours at a time, man. This
Before
is
you do that, I want to add something real quick because I'll give you a chance to
okay.
close out and talk. But I
Okay.
want to add something because to what you just said, you know, the best organizations, of which I think the military is one of them. What I tell people is it's the greatest psychological experiment since 1776. We expose people, we train people, and we expose them to stuff, and then we train them some more. You know, you don't if you don't understand the seven cycles of functioning of a M4 A2 rifle or whatever variant we're using now, and you can't, you know, extracting, ejecting, locking, talking, whatever it is, right? If you
You're
don't
asking a
understand
promotion
that,
board. That's a promotion board question.
if you don't, if you can't, if you, you know, I still know those things, right? Those seven cycles of, and because I do that, if something happens to somebody's weapon, I know kind of where the problem might be. I know what corrective action or remedial action I need to take because there's a different. Let me stop. But my point is companies now are taking deliberate steps to expose the to take do exposure training with their people like we do in the military, and so that they can analyze their decision making skills, and then so they can go back and run it with them, and so they can see who performs, you know, under what circumstances. And so that helps us be more resilient too, right? Being exposed, of which we were from day one in basic training, helps us to be more resilient, and to understand that there's even in the midst of the worst day that there's hope, right? And I think for me, as we, you know, as this, we close this conversation out, it's you know, it's I'll tell you right now, the stock market is doing better than ever. The indices are, you know, for the most part through the roof, and yet there's people over here that feel, you know, confidence, consumer sentiment is low. It's a very atypical environment when you look at the labor market, when you look at where the stocks are. You know, typically we've seen things just down across the board, right? And this is a great opportunity to become more hopeful, to become more efficacious and resilient and optimistic, because life is rarely a zero-sum game. You can fail today, this minute, and succeed the next. You know, this conversation could have went terrible. The next one could have went great. You know, there's opportunity to always to get better. And I'll tell you that as I've started my, you know, I'm finishing my PhD in clinical psychology. And so what I didn't realize when I got into it is this is like doing a lot of equivalents in terms of training and how they train you, and the depth and the breadth of the training is like getting a medical doctor degree. And so what I'll tell you is I was seeing a client the other day and asked one of the supervising psychologists a question. He says, "I don't know, you tell me what you think. Is the person's IQ average, or is it above average, or is it below? You know, or what do you think? Are they schizophrenic, or they have, is this substance induced psychosis?" You know, my point is, I wouldn't have been able to do that if, you know, that adult learning model. That's what you guys, you know, the drill sergeants, that's what the NCOs always, that's how we learned in the military. And we all know that while defense is often superior position tactically, you always have to mount an offense. You always have to figure out a way to regain, consolidate your gains, you know, maintain them, and either get the momentum back or maintain it, right? And that's through offense, because nobody ever, you don't go anywhere sitting still. You don't go anywhere in a defensive, you know, from a defensive standpoint. And from what we talked about today, what I've got from our conversation is that you have to know in here and, you know, in here what you want to do. And if you do that, it doesn't matter. I mean, Garrett Griffin or TJ Trent could be major buttholes to you, but it will allow you to maintain your perspective. Perspective is much more superior than perception. It allow you to maintain your perspective and understand what the value in this is for you. But what do you ha what you know what's the what do you want to leave us with today?
So the first thing I want to share is an old African proverb that states, if there's no enemy on the inside, the enemy on the outside can do you no harm. And so basically, happiness, motivate, everything comes from the inside. And once you realize that, everything on the outside really don't matter. That person that you say holding you back can't, if you are destined to be something, nobody can stop you from doing it. It was so many things that so many people told me throughout my life and throughout my military career that I wasn't going to be able to do, and I ended up doing them all. And it wasn't that I was trying to prove them wrong, but it was to prove myself right. So that's the one thing I want to leave with the group, especially based off of what you just said. I want to say thank you again for the opportunity for having me on here, man. I really enjoyed the conversation. I think it was really great. I also want people to remember that today is Memorial Day. And so this is the day that we remember those fallen comrades that paid the ultimate sacrifice, that didn't come home. A lot of people get this day confused with Veterans Day. And I see it, and I say this to even the veterans that's out there, because there's a lot of young men and women don't realize the importance of this day. I didn't until I joined the military, I didn't understand this day. I used to think Memorial Day was a day that we was out of school. That, you know, the family got together, we barbecued, there was a lot of dominoes and cards playing, a lot of trash talking. Not until I joined this military and realized that freedom is not free. And so I would ask those people, you know, even if they see this video later, that, hey, you know, take the time throughout your day to realize that the freedoms that you had today, somebody paid the ultimate sacrifice so that you can have them. Freedom is not free. And let's make sure that we remember those young men and women that paid the ultimate sacrifice.
Well, that's great. Appreciate you joining us. And this episode will air on the Friday, the end of the week. I think that's the 30, 31st. So hope everybody listens to it. Thank you, everyone. Okay.